What's going on? Welcome to Revolution. Give Tuki a round of applause, man. That's a lot of information. We are really, really excited about that shoe drive. I love it because the mission of You Matter is getting in our community, and people know that we want to try to serve our community, and this is an easy, great way to do it. If you don't have enough, you know, somebody asks, hey, I don't have enough money for a full pair of shoes. Can we give you some donations and just add it together? You can definitely do that. But we just want to show our community some love and students some love. I got a soft spot for the next generation. Anybody else just love the next generation? Yeah. So we want to help them anytime we can. We will volunteer to do that. So sorry I volunteered us without asking first, but I hope we can do it. But today we're going to continue this series called Burn to Plow. Everybody say that, Burn to Plow. Burn the Plow. It's been this series. We're in week 3. Next week is the final week, and I'm going to give you a little sneak peek. Next week is going to be the easiest topic to understand, but the hardest topic to apply. If you don't know what that means, come back next week, and I'll tell you, all right? But today, we're going to continue this theme, and we're looking at this idea that we believe that God is calling all of us to a type of life, to a greater type of life, and that means that God has a life plan for us, that He wants to do something in our lives. And we're using this definition of greater, understanding that God is ready to accomplish His kind of greatness, in your life that you can't do on your own, that God wants to do something, that God's calling us forward. And so what we're looking at is this idea of, like, what are the things that get in the way? What are the mindsets? What are the habits? What are the temptations that get in the way of stepping into that life? And once we identify it, that's what we're saying, burn that plow, because it's a plow holding us back. And so we're looking at this idea, what do I need to get rid of so God can work in my life? What do I need to move on from so God can work in my life? And today, we're just going to double down with that. So, first I have a question. Have you ever had really high expectations for something, and it didn't end up meeting them? Anybody? Like, you've been let down, right? There's so many instances in our life where that happens. I remember a couple years ago, I took a group of students to Staten Island, New York for a mission trip. We were going to help this church that was a little less fortunate than us, and we were going to do some projects for them. We were going to use services for them, but we're going to spend 2 days in the city. So I've never been to New York City, right? I'm a small town Illinois boy. Anybody ever been to New York? It is massive, right? It is people are crazy there, right? It is crazy, crazy, crazy. But anyways, we were going to go there in the city, and we were going to do all these things, and I'm thinking like Kevin McAllister, Home Alone 2, Lost in New York type of stuff, where he does everything in one day. Side point, Home Alone 2 is the best Home Alone out there, just saying, right? And so he goes and sees everything. I know you shake your head, you're wrong, but that's all right. He's going out there, he's seeing every single thing, and so we're like, we're going to be Kevin McAllister in New York. Rising sun takes on New York, and we didn't take on New York by any means, because we get there and realize, like, we're not going to be able to do everything. And so we kind of came up with a plan of what we're going to do, and one of the things everybody wanted to do was they wanted to go see this little statue. What's this called? Statue of Liberty. And doesn't it look huge in this picture? Like, it looks like it's, I'm a simple man. It looks as tall as that building right there, right? I think it's the Freedom Tower. It looks huge. And so I got up to this Statue of Liberty, we're by it, and I realized, like, it's not much taller than Shaquille O'Neal. Like, it's not very big at all. It's awesome and important in history, but we were all left disappointed. Like, man, it just didn't, it left a lot to be desired. Now, it's great, but it was so tiny in comparison to what we thought in our heads. And so sometimes we live life like this. We're like, hey, I have a plan for my career, right? I got a number. I graduated college, or I'm getting out of high school, and I'm like, I have a number in my head that I'm going to reach a certain number. And when I reach that number, guess what, y'all? I'm going to be rich. And then you get that number, and they didn't tell you about taxes, right? They didn't tell you about how much groceries cost, gas money, rent. And all of a sudden, you're not rich, right? You're like, oh, doesn't meet reality. Or I think I'm going to be this far along in my career. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to have this goal, and by the time I'm 28, I'm going to be the highest office in the company. Like, it's going to be awesome. And then you get there, like, man, I'm not going up that ladder quickly. It's boring. It's not as fun as I thought. Maybe you're about to graduate high school, and you're like, I got this dream college I want to go to. Purdue, right? That's the dream, baby, right? And you're like, I want to get in there. And everybody else gets in there. And then you get your letter. And you're like, yeah, not happening, right? That happened to me. No one was accepting me. I've told you that before, right? Maybe you got into a relationship. Maybe you know someone. And you had these expectations of what it was going to be like, and it doesn't mean it. Maybe started coming to, you know, God, you started coming to church, you hear about God, you're like, hey, God's calling you to something, God's going to work in your life, and this is what it's going to look like, and this is what's going to happen. And all of a sudden, that's not what's happening at all. Or maybe on the simplest terms, you just sit down one day, you say, this is the dream I had for my life, and my reality is not meeting those expectations. You know what happens when you end up in that land of unmet expectations? When expectations don't meet our reality, it ends up in disappointment, doesn't it? You left disappointed, you left frustrated, you left angry. And so when there's a gap, this really could be so many issues in life. Like when there's a gap between our expectations and our reality, what happens? Frustration, disappointment. And a lot of our problems relationally, a lot of our problems career-wise, a lot of our problems maybe financially, maybe a lot of our problems in our marriages is when our expectations don't become our reality and those two things hit and meet and all of a sudden I'm left frustrated and disappointed. So that happens in all of our lives. What we're going to look at today and navigate through is what happens when that comes into our faith? What happens when that comes into our relationship with God? Because there's a promise in the book of Proverbs, and here's what it says. You can make many plans, and I know some of you are planners, and you got your whole next 30 years planned out. But at the end of the day, no matter how many plans you have, no matter how many plans I have, but the whose purpose will prevail? The Lord's purpose will prevail. You can make all the plans you want. You can have the biggest dreams you want, and you should dream, and you should plan, and you should have goals. But there's going to become a point that eventually God's purpose will prevail. And so what happens when there becomes a gap between your definition of what greater is and God's definition? What happens when God isn't operating, or God isn't working, or God isn't doing what you maybe thought he should or what you thought he would? That's what we're going to navigate today, because there's tension in that. And sometimes, so many people, they walk away from God. They walk out on their faith because it wasn't what they expected. God didn't meet their expectations. God didn't work in the way they wanted. So today, I want to navigate through this because it's really important to talk about. But also, I want us to look, we're going to look at this kind of encounter. I call it an encounter or an account that's not so super familiar. Maybe you've heard of it before. Maybe you haven't. We're going to basically go through the entire thing. So there's going to be a lot of verses, and we'll explain it. But I want us to read this in a very, very specific way today. I want us to read this as we're looking into a mirror, and the reflection is pointing back at us, and we see ourselves. And where do you see yourself in what we're about to read? So we're going to be in a book called 2 Kings. And I'm going to just go ahead and start. It says, now Naaman, everybody say Naaman. Naaman, he's the man of the hour today, was a commander of the army of the king of Aram. And he was a great man, so we know he was great in the sight of his master, and he was highly regarded. He had a great, great reputation, because through him the Lord had given victory to Aram, and he was a vigilant soldier, but he had leprosy. So there's a man named Naaman, and we learn that he has a good reputation. We learn that he is a commander. We learn that he's successful. I kind of think of that movie 300, you know, their abs are all popping out, their biceps are out there. That's what I kind of imagine him looking like. He's got like blood in his beard. All the girls want to know him. All the guys want to be him. That's Naaman. But what's really interesting is that he was not an Israelite. Matter of fact, it says he was a commander of the army that fought the Israelites. And it says this little phrase, because through him the Lord had given victory to Aram. So God allowed Naaman to have victory over the Israelites, who the Israelites were disobeying God. And so God is already using Naaman. Naaman doesn't believe in God, but God is using him, and he's working out a bigger narrative through all this. So he's got this great reputation. He's wealthy, probably. He's probably good looking. He's got a good life. But there's two words we got to notice. It says, but he has something. What does he have? He has leprosy. We've hit on leprosy. Leprosy was this disease that would kind of destroy your life. It would take sometimes 10, 20, 30 years for it to fully come into effect, but it would ultimately destroy your life. It would ultimately make you a social outcast. So he has leprosy, and we don't know how much leprosy he has. We don't know how long he's had leprosy, but we can assume some things. We can assume it hasn't been very long. Why can we assume that? Because he's still socially acceptable. So maybe a very small group of people know he has leprosy, but eventually everybody's going to find out, and eventually everybody's going to make him an outcast. Eventually, he will be, his life will be destroyed by leprosy. But at this moment, he's not. So there's kind of this image we can start painting, that he would go out in public, and he would have his armor on, and his biceps would be popping, his abs would be popping, and he would look good. And everybody would see him, and they would maybe cheer his name and say, man, that's Naaman. He's the commander. He's the general. He is an awesome guy. And then he would go home, and he would take off his armor. And he'd probably, if this is the beginning stages, would have noticed a little rash. That rash would eventually turn into spots. So he may have little spots beneath his armor that no one else can see, but he sees it, and he knows it's there. And I want to just stop here and talk about this, because maybe today we all came with something. He had leprosy, so we're going to say it this way, so you remember it. Everyone's got a butt. You get what I'm saying? Right? I didn't add two T's to it, but everyone's got a butt. Right? Everyone's got a butt. And what I mean by that is everyone came in here today with something underneath their armor. We may not be able to see it. You may not talk about it. You may know it's hurting you, but you don't really talk about it. But I want to bring it up because maybe for the first time in Naaman's life in a long time, his expectation was, I'm going to continue to be a vigilant warrior. I'm going to continue to be awesome. I'm going to continue to do all these things. But his reality wasn't going to line up. Why? Because of leprosy. And maybe your butt, or we can say it this way, what's the thing beneath your armor? Maybe that thing beneath your armor is what is keeping you, or is the gap between your expectations and your reality. Maybe it's the addiction. Maybe it's the habit. Maybe it's the temptation. Maybe it's the mindset. Maybe it's something going on in your marriage. Maybe it's something that you need God to come into your life and work. And you're like, hey, if you could just fix this, then I can experience this greatness. For Naaman, it was leprosy. For Nathan, it's something else. For you, it's something else. What's the thing beneath your armor? You need to, today, to figure that out, because as we're going through this, maybe it's the area where God's not working the way you think he should. And so I want to draw attention to this because we're going to have to navigate through this together. So he's got this leprosy. And then we read this. Now bands of raiders from Aram had gone out and taken captive a young girl from Israel. So now there's a girl from Israel. She's a slave. And she says this. She said to her mistress, if only my master would go see the prophet. So if only Naaman would go see the prophet who is in Samaria, he would cure him of leprosy. So this girl right here who's a slave is kind of a missionary. She says, listen, there's a God, the God of Israel, the one true God. And there's a prophet back in Samaria. And in Samaria, this prophet, he has the power through God to heal you. I wish he would just go back there. So here's what kind of happens next. Naaman went to his master, to his king, and said, listen, this is what my servant girl said. Can I go and get healed? And he says, by all means, go. I will send a letter to the king of Israel. And so Naaman left, taking 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 sets of clothing. Basically, he's like, hey, I'm going to bring all the riches I can. I'm bringing the Lambos. I'm bringing the Jordan 1s. I'm bringing the money. I'm bringing Taylor Swift tickets. I'm bringing everything with me because I'm going to bring this man, this prophet, all these riches. And when I bring him these riches, he's going to heal me because I'm going to pay him to heal me. So he goes to this king, and in verse 7 it says, he gets to the king of Israel, and the king tore his robes. Like, that's really weird, isn't it? Like, I'm so glad we don't do this anymore. They used to do it when they were in big distress. Like, I'm glad that no one comes in here and starts tearing their clothes off, right? Like, back then they did, though. And he's like, am I God? Can I kill and bring someone back to life? He's like, why have you come to me? Do you think I can heal you? I have no powers. I have no authority. I cannot heal you. And then it continues. Why does this fellow, I love that. Why does this good old fellow, why does he send someone to me to be cured of leprosy? See how he's trying to pick a quarrel with me? So the king isn't reading the letter correctly. It's like that game of telephone. You ever play that game of telephone growing up, right? And so you start with one word or one sentence. You're like, let's just play for a second. So I would start and I would say, Purdue is the best basketball school in Indiana. And some of you are like, awesome. And then we go like 10 people down. Boom, 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 boom. You get over here. And all of a sudden, they didn't hear very well. They'd be like, I use the best basketball school in Indiana. It would be so messed up by the time it got to the end of the line. Like, it's just diluted, right? That's what's happening here. The king misses it. Well, this is where it gets good. Elisha, and Elisha's a prophet. Elisha is the prophet they're talking about. Elisha performed more miracles in the Bible than anybody except Jesus. And he goes to the king. He's like, yo, why are you tearing your clothes off and freaking out? Why have you done that? have the man come to me, and I'll show him who God is. Have the man come here, I'll show him who God is. I'll show him that there is one true God, and I'll show him there's a prophet in Israel named Elisha who works for the one true God. So Naaman, all right, Naaman's a little upset now, because all of a sudden his plans aren't going the way they should. He's having to go here and here and here. So he's like, finally, okay, I'll go to Elisha. So he goes to Elisha, and he went there with his horses and his chariots and his Taylor Swift tickets and everything, and stopped at the door of Elisha's house. So now he's expecting something. We got to understand. He's expecting Elisha to come out and meet him, but that's not what happens. Elisha sends a messenger, an intern, if you will, to him and says, go wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan, and your flesh will be restored, and you'll be cleansed. Okay. He sends a messenger, and Naaman's upset. He's like, you don't even come to meet me? Do you know who I am? Do you know what I've done? Do you know the things I have done and seen? You're not even going to come and meet me? And he's upset, and he's angry. It says he went away angry and said, I thought he would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord, his God, and wave his hand over the spot and cure me of my leprosy. He's like, I don't know what I thought was going to happen. I thought I would get here and there'd be like a jet flyover, right? I don't know. I thought I would get here and some band would come out and start singing some songs and celebration would happen. And I would give him all these riches and all this gold and he would sham wow, like, boom, you're healed, right? And I would go away and I'd be healed and I'd go back to my place and he'd go back to his thing and everything was settled. I'd buy my healing and I'd be good. He's like, but that's not what happened. Do you know what happened? He's like, this dude tells me to go to the Jordan River. Like, you know what the Jordan River is, right? Like, it's really significant in the history of Israel. But if you were just to look at a picture of it, you'd be like, are you sure that's not a creek? Yes, it's not a creek. He's like, he tells me to go to the Jordan River. I got better rivers back where I came from. Why would I go in this muddy, dirty Jordan River? And on top of that, you know what he told me to do? He told me to dip myself in it up and down 7 times. You know what I told him? Kick rocks, bro. I'm not going to your river, right? I'm not going to do that. Do you know who I am? Dip myself in the river 7 times. He's like, I would rather, this is where he's at, I would rather die with my leprosy than to go dip myself in your river. I'm not doing it. So I'm going to take my riches, I'm going to take my money, I'm going to take my horses, and I'm going back where I came from. So he's upset, he's angry, he's like, I'm taking my ball and I'm going home. And his anger, this is important, his anger is rooted in the fact that his reality is not meeting his expectations. So let's stop here. There's a lot going on. He has leprosy. He realizes he has leprosy. He knows there is no cure for it. He knows there's no way to be cured for it. One day, a slave girl comes to him and says, listen, there's a God and there's a prophet back in Samaria where I came from that he can heal you. I've seen God do amazing things. Elisha has done amazing things through the power of God. Go back there. Naaman's like, I don't have anything else to lose. I don't know what else I could do, so I'm going to go back. And he goes back and he meets the prophet, well, a messenger of the prophet. And the prophet says, hey, you're going to get healed, but here's what you got to do. You got to dip yourself in this river 7 times. So you're going to get what you want, but not the way you want it. So instead of saying, okay, well, that's not what I really had planned, he's like, no, no, no. I'm not doing this. This is dumb. This is stupid. It makes no sense. I'm not going to do it. So let's stop here. Let's use this as a mirror. How often do we say, God, I need something from you. God, I need you to work. I need you to heal me. God, I need you to save my marriage. God, I need you to help me overcome these temptations. God, I need you in my life. I don't know what I need, but I need some deliverance from whatever I'm going through. God's like, we've talked about this before, God's like, okay, here's what I need you to do. You're like, whoa. That's not what I thought. It's not what I expected. What happens when God's version of greater isn't lining up with our expectations of greater? What happens? This is really important. What happens when you pray to God and God doesn't answer or doesn't answer the way you want? what happens in that tension? What happens in those moments? Because in those moments, that's what can make or break faith. That is what could destroy your relationship with God. So what do we do next? Because we probably have not prayed to be healed from leprosy, but we've prayed God to do something in our life. And God answers, but maybe not in the terms that we think. So this is where Naaman is. He's upset. And remember, when realities don't meet expectations, there's a gap. And the gap also often brings disappointment and anger. So he's upset. And here's what his friends say. This is why you need good people in your life. Naaman's servants went to him and said, "Listen, my father, if the prophet had told you to do something great, would you have not done it? But how much more then when he tells you to wash and be cleansed?" He's like, "Listen, if he would have told you to climb a mountain, clip the toenail of a giant, you would have done it in a heartbeat. If he would have told you to kill 100 men, you would have done it in a heartbeat. But because he says dip yourself in a river, you won't do it?" Naaman's like, "That's right. I'm not dipping myself in no river. I'm not doing it." Anybody know any stubborn people in their lives? Come on now. Right? Yeah. He's like, "I'm not doing it. Even if it heals me, I'm not doing it. I'm just not going to do it." So here, he wants the healing, but he wants it on his own terms. So let's use the word for sickness. He has a sickness, but he wants to write his own prescription. Now we're getting somewhere. How often do we try to write our own prescriptions? "God, I want you to heal me in this way. God, I want you to bless me in this way. God, I want you to do this in my way. God, I want you to do this on my terms. God, I want to go here on my terms. God, I'm going to give my life to you, but here is the checklist of all the things you must follow." And all of a sudden, he doesn't follow those. You're like, "God, this isn't what I wanted. I know what I want, so I'm going to write my own prescriptions. I'm going to just put it on the pad, write my own prescription, because I know best." It's like, "God, I know what I'm doing." And you ever look at somebody and be like, "Dude, you think you know what you're doing, but you don't know what you're doing at all? Have you seen your life?" Right? And so I think of this. Back in high school, I took 4 semesters of wood shop. Like, I was like Picasso. I was slicing and dicing that wood all day, right? I made hampers. I made side tables. I made cutting boards. Man, I took 4 semesters. I had it going on. For you young people, I had the riz when it came to wood shop, okay? I knew what I was doing. And so I was very confident in my abilities. And so one day, my stepdad wanted to bond with me. And he's like, "Let's go make some shelves in the garage." He's like, "Bet, right? We're going to do this." And this is my moment. I was going to show him at 15 who was the alpha of the house when it came to wood shopping. So I'm puffing up my chest. I'm like, "I know what I'm doing." We get to our garage. I start making it, and he's standing behind me, and he's watching me, and he says these words. He's like, "I think it's going to be crooked." And I said, "It's not going to be crooked. You're just staring at it the wrong way." And so I keep building it, keep building it, keep building. He's just standing back there, letting me do my thing. And I step back, put my chest out, like my little bird chest. I'm like, "Oh, I'm feeling confident. I'm feeling good." And I look at it, and everything is tilting this way. He's like, "I told you it was going to be tilted." I said, "It's not tilted. I just had something in my eye, man. I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing." How many times do we live life like that? God's like, "Hey, I don't think that's the best thing for you." Yeah, I know what I'm doing. "God, I don't think you want to make the movie." "I know what I'm doing." Right? And we try to write our own prescriptions, and we're like, "God, I want it to happen, but I want it to happen the way I want it to happen." And that's hard, and that's difficult. Let's go back to what we read, verse 11. And sometimes when we're reading the Bible, sometimes you want to read it 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times to make sense. So there's going to be two words. There's going to be two words in this one verse. Two words. There's more than two words in it, but there's two words that are really important. And these two words are the two words that may be creating the gap between your expectations and your reality. These two words may be the two words that are destroying your faith. These two words may be the two words, if we can just figure out this mindset, it may change everything. So here it goes. Verse 11, it says, "But Naaman went away angry and said, 'I thought that he would surely come out to me and stand and call out on the name of the Lord, his God, wave his hand over the spot and cure me of my leprosy.'" ShamWow, right? So did you catch the two words? It was, I thought he was going to do this. I thought I was going to give him all this money. He's going to celebrate, and I was going to get healed. You ever end up in the land of I thoughts? I thought I was going to be happier than this. I thought it would look some way different than it does now. God, I thought greater meant greater on my terms, not just your terms. God, I thought you were going to, heal them. God, I thought you would answer this prayer. We have a lot of thoughts. And it becomes a tension. What do we do? How do we navigate through this when our thoughts don't line up with God's thoughts? Again, this is why I love God. God doesn't pull a fast one on us. He's not like, I'm going to call you to a greater life, and you start following me. He's like, gotcha. No, that's not what happens, right? Here's what happens. He says this. For my thoughts are not your what? Thoughts. Neither are your ways my ways. You may have thoughts. You may have plans. You may have a way you think it should go. But it doesn't always line up with what I have for you. So Elisha tells Naaman, you're going to get healed. God's going to work. But this transformation is not going to happen on your terms. God's not going to do it like you expect. God's going to answer, but he's not going to do it the way you expect. Again, and that is hard. So I sat down this week and I looked at these verses. And I looked at my own life, and I said, what do I do? What do I do? Not anybody else, but what do I do when I think life should look a certain way, and I pray for something to happen, and God doesn't answer? What do I do? What is my posture? And I wish I could say, I just grind through it, and I'm happy with it. I'm like, God, do whatever you want to do, and I'm always smiling about it, but I would be lying to you. So I looked in this mirror and I saw a reflection. That's why I like to call these mirror verses. We're looking in and seeing a reflection. I didn't like what I saw at times. And I have very specific moments in my life where I felt like, God, I really, really wanted something. And God didn't come through. The first time, and I've talked about this before, one of the darkest days, years of my life, was, and some of you relate to this struggle, was the struggle of infertility. And so here I am, pastor of a church, leading people, preaching every week, but I'm in a dark place. I'm like, God, hey, like, I'm giving my life to you. I'm literally doing exactly what you called me to do. I am preaching your word every day, every single week of my life. You're not going to come through? Like, do you love me? Do you care about me? And I would also say things like this, God, what are you up to? Because like this isn't what I thought. This isn't what my definition of greater looked like. God, what are you doing? So what do we do like that? Like, what do we do when we find ourselves in this spot? Because maybe you've been here. You're like, God, it just doesn't make sense. It's not what I thought you were gonna do. It's not the plan I had. Like, do you let it destroy you? Or do you keep pushing through? So let's continue to look at this. So Naaman, he's like, I got nothing else to do. Like, I could trust on God or I could go back home. So he goes back. He's like, okay, I'm going to do it. And he went down and he went to the Jordan River and he dipped himself in the Jordan River 7 times. 7 is a very biblical number, significant here, right? As the man of God had told him, and his flesh was restored and became clean like that of a young boy or like a baby's bottom, right? A lot of butts today, right? Keep with the theme. He became healed. God came through, not in the way he expected. And then I want you to notice, he goes back. Because God is doing something bigger in this entire narrative that we do not really see unless you notice this last verse here. So he just got healed. What would you do if you just got healed of leprosy? What would you do if God just answered your biggest prayer? You'd probably talk about it. You'd probably celebrate it. Here's what he does. So Naaman and all his attendants, everything went back to the man of God, went back to Elisha. And he stood before him and said, what would you say? Would you talk about the leprosy? Most likely. He says, now, I know. He doesn't mention leprosy one time. He goes, now, I know that there is no God in all the world except in Israel. And all of a sudden, we see something. We see what God was trying to do the entire time. Naaman wanted physical healing. Leprosy. God says, I'm going to give you something better. I'm going to heal you, but there's something going on that you don't realize. And God uses this moment of leprosy, this curse of leprosy, the thing that he wanted changed the most, to become the very thing he uses to what? To draw him closer to God. He wanted physical healing, and he leaves with spiritual healing. He leaves knowing who God is. And after this verse, he says that he goes back to Israel. He goes back to the nation that fights Israel, and he worships God in a nation that doesn't know God. God was working out this entire narrative. God was drawing him closer to him this entire time. Naaman got the healing, but he got the greater life that God was trying to work, that Naaman knew him, and this was the opportunity. So we see here that sometimes trusting that God has something greater than the I thoughts we have is the mindsets we have to live with. And so Naaman, but he came to this point, but it's a drastic, like, 180 turnaround. How does he get here? How does he get from this moment where he doesn't know God, doesn't want to do what God has for him? Maybe, how do we get from this moment where we're not happy with God, God's not working, we don't know if we can trust God, we don't know if anything is going to actually change, we don't know any of that. How does he get to this moment? There's some type of a mindset that shifts, and it's not going to be what I think you expect, but he had to burn the plow of something, the same plow that you and I have to burn. And he burned the plow of pride. And I know that sounds counterintuitive. I know it's not what you probably expected, but he burned the plow of pride. Let me explain this. He's a man of pride, of ego, of success, of being kind of worshipped by other people. And so he comes this entire time, he comes to Israel with gifts, thinking he can buy his way to what God wants to do in his life or what he wants God to do for him. And it doesn't work. And he gets the news, like, you're going to heal yourself. You're going to be healed by doing this. This is what you have to do. God's going to heal you, but you have to do this. It's dipping himself in the river 7 times. Eventually he gets to that point. So he goes to this river. He travels the 15, 17 miles from where Elisha was. He goes to the river. And his army's there. You got to imagine this. His army's there. And he's probably stripped naked. His army's there. And he dips himself once. Nothing happened. Dipped himself twice. Nothing happened. Dipped himself 3rd time. Nothing happened. At this time, if you're one of the soldiers, you're probably laughing at him, right? Like, what's going on? Dips himself the 4th time. Boom. Nothing. 5th time. Nothing. 6th time. Nothing. And he's probably thinking, this is so dumb. I knew it. I knew it. He just set me up. And then on that 7th time, he dips down, and he comes back up. It says all the spots were gone. It's like God was doing something with every single dip, because every single dip, 1 through 7, took humility, obedience, and letting go of pride and control. So he took this man of honor, of great, you know, kind of reputation, who publicly would have cared about his image, and it almost made him look like a young child bobbing up and down that water like a bobber, right? But he gets healed. And it wasn't until he let go of his pride. It wasn't until he couldn't buy his way into it. It didn't matter what his reputation was. It wasn't until he let go of pride. Maybe today, pride of having to be in control. Pride is not even the type of pride where you think you're better than other people, but the pride of, of thinking that you know what's best. The pride of thinking, I know what prescription I need. Maybe that's what we need to let go. Because pride can blind us from what God is trying to do in our lives. James says that God opposes the proud but shows favor to the humble. What that means is he opposes. He is against people who push him out. Because pride pushes God out. Pride says, my will is greater than God's will for me. I know what's best. I'm going to write the prescriptions. And maybe what God is trying to say is push away the pride and trust me. I love this old quote. It says, the reason why many are still troubled. Anybody in here troubled? Still seeking? Anybody still seeking? Still making a little forward progress? Anybody who just says, like, I'm trying to change, but I'm making so little progress forward? It's because they haven't yet come to the end of themselves. What did Naaman have to do to get healed? He had to come to the end of himself. We're still trying, this hit me like a brick. We're still trying to give orders God, do this. God, do this. God, do this. And interfering with God's work in us. And it's not until we get to the point where we're saying, God, your will has to be greater than my will, that we will start taking steps to that greater life God has for us. I want to end with this imagery. I often use this imagery when I'm talking to people about God's will and our will. There's a mountain in front of you, right? I'm not talking about a hill. I'm talking about a mountain, right? Not an Indiana hill, but a mountain like in Colorado, okay? And so you got two ways to get up this mountain. You can walk up it with your gear, right? And it's big. It's long. It's tall. But you got to walk up it in your own pride, your own ego, your own talents. You're going to look at this room. Some of you look good, but you ain't going to make it up that mountain. I'm sorry, right? You're not going to make it up there. Your North Faces and your Ugg boots aren't going to get you to that top of that mountain. You can do it that way. Or you can say, I'm going to take the ski lift. So by the very definition of taking a ski lift is saying, I can't get up the mountain myself, or I want to do it this way because I know this way makes sense. And so the ski lift is going to bring you to the top of the mountain. And it may wiggle a little bit if you're scared of heights. Maybe a little freaky, right? It may take longer. It may stop. It may pause. It may, more people may get in the way. It may just not go the way you think it would be. It may not be super comfortable, but it's ultimately going to get you to the top of the mountain. There's two postures to live this life with, my way or God's way. That's what it really comes down to for so many things. I'm going to do it my way, my strength, my talents, my abilities. That worked for Naaman until what? Until it didn't, until he finds a spot of leprosy underneath his armor that he can do nothing about. Or you can say, God, this is the posture of living God's way. Say, God, I cannot make it to the top but without you. I can't do this life without you. I may not always understand what you're doing. I may not always agree with what you're doing. I may not even know where you're taking me, but God, I want to live with hands open wide. If you say to dip myself seven times in the Eel River, I'll do it. God, I want to live the life you have for me. So I'm going to ditch the plow of pride and stop writing my own prescriptions and trust you. That's the humble pill that I had to swallow in my life many, many times. And I'm so thankful for God, a God who doesn't always give me what I think I need, but brings me the life he has for me. There's so many prayers that I look back in my life and say, God, I'm so thankful that you did not answer that, because I am not very smart, right? But God, you know what you're doing. And I want you to hear this today. I don't know where you're at in your walk, but God wants to work in your life. We have a Father who knows us, who loves us, and it works in mysterious ways, ways we don't often understand. But so, so often, every time, his ways may be different, but they're always better. And living with this posture is what it means to burn the plow of pride. So we're going to sing just a moment. We're going to sing this song called Wanting to Be Like You, to work in ways we don't understand. Let's pray. God, we're so thankful for who you are, for what you do, the ways you operate, the way you move, God. And we're so thankful that you don't always give us what we think we need, but you give us the life you're calling us to, Father. So I pray you meet us in this room. Your spirit fills us today, Father. And we live with the posture, hands open wide, saying, God, here's my life. I trust you. Lead me and guide me. And I'm burning the plow of pride. To your name we pray. Amen.